Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, have you ever had to fire a client? I think every one of you probably listening has done it some way, shape, or form. And it's not fun, but there's probably a necessary evil to it. And we're going to chat with our good friend, Dr. Lauren Smith. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. You know, this is a good topic to, and I think a very timely one, if you will, to chat about. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. So to our listeners, Dr. Smith is a graduate in 2008 from Ross University School of Veterinary Medicine. Woohoo! You always have to give a shout out because, you know, a lot of listeners are like, yeah, it's my vet school.
Go Ross. And
yeah, and we have a lot of vet students that tune in. So we always got to give them mad props. And she completed her clinical year at Cornell University. She's worked as a small animal associate veterinarian and relief emergency medicine veterinarian. Dr. Smith is a speaker and writer who has contributed articles to well-known veterinary and medical websites, such as Kevin MD. And Dr. Andy Rourke has spoken at vet schools and prominent conferences, including the AVMA, Western Veterinary Conferences. She is the creator of The Vetitude, a website and social media presence that promotes improved client-veterinary relationships through empathy, healthy boundaries, and emotional intelligence. And that's how kind of you and I connected, is through your social media presence. I think you do great work on there. So I do want to give you mad props from one social media veterinarian to another. It's not easy.
Thanks. So can take over a little sometimes.
It really can. It really can, especially with everything you got going on. It's a lot. So, so let's chat about this. So, you know, I hate to say the term difficult clients, but literally there are, but let's kind of like expand that a little bit. I understand that there are five types of difficult clients, and why is it important to know which type you're dealing with?
Yeah. So I've kind of come up with myself five kind of broad classifications of difficult clients. Cause I think just like when you're dealing with medicine, it's easiest to come up with a treatment plan when you have a diagnosis, when you know what's going on. So the first thing that you want to do when you're dealing with a difficult client is diagnose what the problem is. And then that's going to help you get to your treatment plan. So for me, I like to, I've kind of come up with these five basic, the most common types that you will see. And I've given them all a little animal avatar because one, obviously we all love animals, but two, I think it also helps us to remember that, even when that evil little chihuahua is trying to bite our faces off in the exam room, we know they're stressed, we know they're freaked out, right? And we still can find some empathy. That doesn't mean we're going to let them bite our faces off, right? But we can have some empathy for them. So our five kinds of difficult clients that I have are, number one is the Chihuahua client. And that is your client who is the typical kind of difficult client that you often think of, who's maybe using threats, who's raising their voice, who is just being antagonizing, right? And a lot of times these guys are all talk, right? But that doesn't mean that you should let them talk to you that way. And so then the next type of difficult client is the cat client. And that's the kind of client who just kind of like is never happy without anything. They may not yell or make threats or stuff, but they're just kind of like constantly annoyed and they just don't give you anything to work with. Like you make this recommendation and they just kind of like grunt or whatever. And then or you make a recommendation and they just like swat it away like a cat swatting your keys off the counter, right? Like that's never going to work.
Right. Yes.
And then you have, I like our Brussels Griffon clients are your typical little, clingy lap dogs, right? Those are the ones that I think of as the kinds of clients who are super needy, who call five times a day, who only want to see Dr. So-and-so and won't talk to anyone else and are needing your constant reinforcement. And these can be obviously really great clients in terms of compliance and kind of how they take care of their dogs, but they can also be very draining and time consuming. Then there is the border collie client. That's the kind of client who likes to herd you into doing what they want you to do. So they come in with the stacks of paper from Dr. Google, right? And they're typically your raw feeders and your anti-vaxxers and everything. And they want to be in charge. And then the last type of difficult client that I think we typically see is the King Charles client. And that's the kind of client because the King Charles, they have those like big puppy dog eyes. They have the quintessential puppy dog eyes that just like make you feel bad even when you haven't done anything wrong, right? So these are the kinds of clients that are kind of using guilt to get at you. And they're like, well, my husband's been furloughed and I have two kids in college. And, you know, like there's just some sob story. And sometimes people have legitimate sob stories, but these are the people who come in with a different, like a sob story every single time. There's just always something. And they're always just trying to get you to feel bad for them to make exceptions or.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are so many of those. I can think of a client in every one of those categories, you know. Yeah. And why do you think that that's important for us to understand?
Because again, each of these clients typically have a different motivation for why they are being either difficult or antagonizing or whatever is going on. So a lot of times your Chihuahua clients are probably feeling kind of threatened and scared, and that they learned that lashing out, you know, makes them feel like they've got some control or some power going on, right? Where, you know, well, I think a lot of these do come down to also a lack of control. A lot of people are feeling this, are reacting this way because that's how they've learned to get control. But like, you know, they're different, different motivations in there. So like your clients who are using guilt, your King Charleses are, they want sympathy probably more than anything else, more than getting their way. They want your sympathy, right? Whereas, you know, the Border Collie clients, what they want more than anything is to feel like they have some control of their pet and what's going on with their pet. Like they want to control their pet's health to feel like they have control over a situation. And that's why a lot of times they don't want to, you know, they are, again, so into alternative medicine or raw feeding or these alternative ways of doing things because they feel like that gives them some sort of control over their pet's health. And so making them feel like they're more of a member of the team is going to be better at, you know, getting through to these clients. So knowing their motivations and knowing is going to help you better be able to understand what's going on with them and connect with them to overcome their pushback.
Yeah. Connection is such a powerful thing. It really is. I think that's ultimately what we all try to achieve is trying to build that connection and show that we are on the same side of that exam table. Right. And, you know, I use an analogy to the clients as a car. I said, you're in the driver's seat. I'm just in the passenger seat. And, you know, our hospital is your car. We want to drive together to make those decisions appropriate for you and your pet. And I think, and I, again, I really love, you know, that you have these analogies. So let's do an example then, doctor, you ready?
Right.
So let's say I am a difficult client. I think, you know, you want to recommend heartworm prevention, to me and to my dachshund. And I'll say, no, you know, you're just trying to sell me something. My dog doesn't need to be on heartworm prevention. It's half the season of the year is wintertime. You know, what are some challenges that you would say to me or like and to the listeners to help give them some advice?
So the first thing I do when I try to address these clients, and a lot of times I'm from the veterinarian side, I'm knowing this before I even go into the exam room, right? So I know that they are going to be difficult because they declined it at the front desk when the receptionist mentioned what they were due for. They declined it to the technician. And a lot of times that can really make me go into the exam room already kind of on the defensive or feeling annoyed with this client. Like, why don't they just want to like, you know, I can't care about the pet more than they can. Why don't they want to protect their pet? You know, and a lot of times we already kind of feel triggered. So I think the first thing we need to do is recognize that we've been triggered and kind of address our own emotional state going into the room. Because if you're going into the room already judging the client or already being on the defensive because you think that they just, because you think that they think that you're trying to get money out of them or whatever the case may be, you're going to be less open to that conversation. And then they're going to sense that and they're going to be less open to that conversation. So I think that's the first thing that we need to do is take a minute, take a few deep breaths, do some grounding, whatever it is. Recognize if we've been triggered, and then try to go into the exam room with an open mind.
Yeah.
So the first step after figuring out our stuff is to figure out the client's stuff, because there are lots of different reasons that they may be declining that heartworm preventative. So usually I'll ask, I heard that you didn't want to do the heart, that you declined going home with the heartworm preventative. Do you mind if I ask why that was? Is there a reason? Do you have some sort of concern about it? And then they may say, well, I just can't afford it. Or I just don't think my pet needs it. It's, you know, we're seven and we've never been on heartworm and we're fine. Or I live in a gated community and I just don't think my pet is exposed to it. Or it could be that I don't want to put all those chemicals in my dog's body. So different people have different reasons. And again, understanding their motivations and their reasons for that pushback are going to help you address it. Because otherwise you're just going in there, seeing that they declined it, and then giving them some rote lecture about why they should be have their dog on heartworm preventative. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to be lectured, right? If you just start lecturing a client, they're going to shut down right away. Right.
Yeah.
So if you know that, hey, they're one of these people who are worried about, you know, side effects and they don't want to put the chemicals in their dog's body, then you can say, listen, I totally understand your concerns. Of course, medications have side effects, but this is actually not a medicine that's going to be in your dog 24/7. I know it seems that way. Like, why do I want to have my dog medicated all the time? Actually, this is a very small dose of medication and it only stays in your dog's body for, you know, a day or two. And then, and works retroactively to kill any heartworms that may have been infected over the last month. It's not something that's in your dog's body the whole time. Right. And so you've addressed their specific concern, as opposed to you might have a different conversation with them. If it is a client who is concerned about the money, then it may be talking about the costs associated with treating heartworm disease if their dog gets heartworm disease.
Yeah. Those are great.
First, you want to figure your own stuff out. Then you want to figure the client's stuff out. Then you can take the time to educate them. Then if there are any issues and they start getting angry or accusing you of things, then you need to take some time to de-escalate the situation. And usually the best way to do that, you know, and there's a lot more to de-escalation, but of course, one of the first steps is just empathizing with the client and trying to, rather than getting defensive, because usually when they start giving us pushback or raising their voices or whatever, then our instinct is to get defensive.
Right.
So you want to try to de-escalate the situation if that happens. And then the last step, quite honestly, is sometimes people are going to say no matter what you do. And so then the last step is kind of learning to accept that you've done everything that you could and you made the best recommendations that you could, and learning to move on from that conversation without internalizing it and taking it personally.
Yeah, you can't take it personally because it's not about you. It definitely isn't about you. You know, it's just more about their concern for their pet or whatnot. So again, education is key without them being lectured. So I really like that. Appreciate that. And what about, you know, you got the client that's like actually at the front desk, like, oh my God, the bill is so expensive, so expensive. What do you do with that then? What are some things you do?
So in those cases, sometimes if it's really just an issue, then I might, you know, offer to have them come back for, you know, say, well, we can hold off on this heartworm test and maybe you can come back next month for a technician appointment to do the heartworm test and take the heartworm preventative. Then I understand it's a lot of money. Maybe if we break things up, right? So again, showing them some compassion or empathy, trying to find alternatives that work with them while still maintaining the importance. This is important, but you know, maybe we can split things up and do it, you know, a little more staged or, you know, or even again, I personally will say, hey, if you can find it cheaper online, then, you know, I totally understand that. Here are the risks associated with that. You lose the guarantee. There have been a few cases, but I let them make that educated decision because that may be something that gets their pet treated otherwise, whereas they're going to, you know, turn it down for me. So.
Do you think that we're seeing a lot more clients that are entitled is the word, needy is what I hear going around. Like, what do you think it is?
So I think that a lot of it is, I think it's a combination of things. I think that one, people view their pets differently than they did 20 years ago, right? So people are a lot more connected to their pets. I think that just in general, people, especially over the last, you know, 2.5 years with COVID, have there's been a big increase in anxiety in people, just like we see an increase in anxiety in our dogs because they're not being socialized. You know, humans are experiencing that too. And that anxiety often comes out inappropriately, especially when we are not just having the practice of dealing with people on a daily basis. So there's some of that loss of connection with people, but also I think just the internal anxiety and trauma that we've all dealt with oftentimes comes out inappropriately. I do think that, I think there have always been entitled people. I don't think that people are necessarily becoming more entitled. I think there have been always people who have been entitled. I just think that maybe there are, again, are some people who are not as good at regulating their emotions anymore because of everything that's been happening in the world. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so interesting. But, you know, my big question for you is, when do you get to the point of firing a client? Like, when is enough enough?
So I have three basic rules for when to fire a client. The first rule is if they cross a red line. And I think you kind of have to get together with your team and decide what your red lines are. Like, for some people, I hear them say, cursing is a red line. Well, I'm from New York. Cursing, if we fired every client who cursed, we would have no clients left, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's not a red line for us here. Now, I think for me, I think the personal lines that I personally think that everyone should have is personal attacks. If a client starts making personal attacks against you or someone on your team, if they are making misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic kind of language, that should be a red line. Threats should be a red line. If they threaten you with lawsuits or violence, or I mean, if they just go, well, if you don't do this, I'm going to leave a bad review. I don't want to count that. But if they threaten a social media campaign where I'm going to go on, the local group and tell everyone in the neighborhood and we're going to pick, you know, that kind of a threat. You know, those I think should be red lines for everybody. Some people may have additional red lines above and beyond that. But you should decide what those are. And if a client crosses that red line, that's it. You know, that's a red line is a one strike and you're out kind of thing. The second is your typical three strikes and you're out rule. So if someone just does something that isn't crossing a red line, but is not appropriate behavior, they raise their voice, they act rudely, then you say, hey, that behavior is not, then you need to let them know that that behavior is unacceptable. So tell them that behavior is unacceptable. And again, make it about the behavior specifically. Don't make it right. A personal attack against the client. Just let them know that behavior is unacceptable. If they do it again, remind them, hey, that behavior is unacceptable. This is now the second time I've had to tell you that. If it happens again, we're going to need to we're no longer going to be able to help you and your pet, and you're going to need to find another veterinarian. And then the third time, that's when you fire them. And a lot of times at this point, they will promise to never do it again, but they've already had their three chances to never do it again. So stay strong. And then the last criteria I use, the last type of client I fire, is kind of what I call what I refer to as the pornography rule. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of client where when you see their name on the schedule, everyone just kind of wishes they'd called out, right? There's not anything specific they did. They have consistently been such a time suck or an emotion suck. And you see their name on the schedule and you just dread it because life is too short. So if everyone in the clinic is like, oh my God, not that client again, that might be a kind of client to let go.
Right. Yeah. Those are powerful. I know that with my groomer, I absolutely love her. I think she's phenomenal. And what she has created, a clientele that is very aligned with their culture. And if she finds out that, the clients or the customers have been like abusive to the staff or whatever, she sends them a letter and she actually will call them to say that our vision and values are not aligned with one another and we're going to be separating. And what that did, she noticed, is that it puts the blame on the customer and the customer doesn't put a review up negatively because they realize, oh my God, the problem is me, not them. Right. You know? So I thought that was really interesting. And there's another practice in the United States that actually interviews clients to see right. if they're part of the, I mean, most likely they say 99% they welcome in, but they want them to be that buy-in of realizing these are our, yeah. this is what our vision, our values and our mission statement are. Mm-hmm. And if this aligns with you, we're going to let you know, almost like a college acceptance letter that you mm-hmm. got accepted into our hospital of our right. culture. But you're building yeah. a great community that way too. I thought it was pretty powerful.
Yeah, I definitely think that a huge part of making sure that you have good clients is making sure that you select for the right clients, whether that's through a formal interview process like that, or just through using your social media to draw in the right kind of clientele. Again, being willing to fire clients who don't fit that vision. Giving your energy to the clients who do fit that vision, right?
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. so definitely, you want to cultivate the right type of clientele to try to minimize problems. And one thing that I do say to a lot of associate veterinarians and technicians and things like that is if you are, and CSRs is if you have a consistent problem with toxic clients, you may want to consider the problem may not be with the clients, but it may be with management.
Yeah.
Because management should be setting expectations for these clients early on. Management should be standing up for you and letting them know, clients know that that mistreatment is inappropriate. So if this is happening consistently, then it might be a clinic culture issue.
Right.
And not an overall client problem, because and then that makes you feel like, you know, it makes you feel like it's all clients, but if you were to go somewhere else, it wouldn't be all clients.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. Well, Dr. Lauren Smith, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us. And
happy to.
And where can we learn more about the Vetitude?
So I am most active on Instagram. I have a Facebook too. I'm The Vetitude at Instagram and Facebook. You can also email me or my website, thevetitude.com.
Excellent. Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate today's podcast. Always helps us out significantly. And we will see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.